Head to Subway for the tangy new Tuscan Chicken Melt, seasoned chicken, melted cheese, and olive vinaigrette. With 9 grams of fat, it's part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal, a simpler way to enjoy eating better. Hurry in today. Subway. Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. Welcome to the BS Report. Two guests today. We're going to have Jacko on and talk about the Yankees and the Red Sox and the baseball season. Then at about the 37-38 minute mark, the king of reality TV, Dave Jacoby. But first, on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, our friend Jacko.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Oh, Johnny!
What's up, Willie?
What's happening?
I didn't know if I was ever going to hear from you again.
How dare you? No, I was traveling last week, and we tried to do one podcast from a hotel room phone, and I sounded like I was calling from, like, Siberia or something. So we decided to scrap it until I got back.
I understand.
Congratulations on the resurgence of the Yankees.
Thank you very much.
And I don't mean that at all. Not
in the
least.
No, you don't, but I'm going to take your false congratulations and accept it regardless.
It's been a magical turnaround for a magical team.
It really has. Boy, I'll tell you, A-Rod, you know, just absolutely, you forget with all the drama and the off-the-field baggage, you just forget how good he is and what a difference he can make. It's been
God,
huge
that,
for him.
That sounded so canned.
It really did. It sounded. Scott Boras prepared that statement for me, and I read it accordingly.
Do you buy Gammon's theory that A-Rod has been unleashed now that his secret is out and he doesn't have to live with this scarlet letter anymore and he is who he is?
No, not really.
Not buying that one?
No, not so much, no. I mean, no. I there's probably still some more secrets that we don't know and don't want to know about A-Rod, but no, I just think that he's a good hitter, and he's proven that. I mean, he's been a good hitter with the Yankees. He hasn't come through in the clutch, and he's been deservedly maligned for that. But he's a solid hitter, and he and Teixeira are a deadly 3-4 combo. I do agree with Peter Gammons calling them the new Manny and Big Poppy in the American League.
That was a little strong.
I do agree with that part of it.
Here's what Gammons said. He wrote, when Alex Rodriguez finished the interview in which he admitted that he had used PEDs during his tenure with the Rangers, he stepped outside and said, all of a sudden, I feel free. I feel free. The failed drug test is behind him. So is the book. So is the hip surgery. And since he's been back, the Yankees have been the best team in the American League.
Yeah, baby.
A little bit later. But this seems to be a different Alex. Not the guy that the great Frank DeFord once described as trying to play the role of Alex Rodriguez in a movie about Alex Rodriguez. It seems he better understands what he is, namely a great baseball player. And
there you go.
Brad Pitt.
Well, that's good. I mean, I will say this. I mean, this is, as I mentioned before, I think in our spring training preview or at some point where I was excited about Nick Swisher. And apparently A.J. Burnett is like a gregarious fellow as well. Like the clubhouse, it's friendlier than it's ever been. And now I've read all these newspaper articles confirming that. People that are actually in the Yankee clubhouse saying the same thing. And I saw on SportsCenter when there was game 5 in the Cavaliers Magic series, and a whole CC Sabathia got tickets for a whole group of Yankees to go, and you saw A-Rod and Mariano Rivera sitting next to each other and enjoying the game and cheering on LeBron, and it's like, wow, you never see A-Rod really with other Yankees. So I think it's like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. They've let him play in their reindeer games now, and it could be a new Alex.
I was laughing when they showed A-Rod and Mariano Rivera together, because you know before the game they had a whole meeting to try to figure out who had to sit next to A-Rod for 2.5 hours. And Rivera was finally like, I'll do it, whatever.
He's a quiet guy. He's religious, so he figured it was his penance that he had to do that for some reason. So.
Actually, maybe they put them together because no one wanted to sit next to either of them because Rivera's religious. He probably doesn't drink.
Yeah, he won't be buying 2 beers when you're sitting next to Rivera. Right?
So. CeCe's like, let's keep those 2 guys out of the suite. I got beers and food. We'll put them courtside.
No, but it was weird just to see A-Rod included in everything. So maybe that's it. It's a new Yankee clubhouse. You got A.J. Burnett with the pies in the face and loosey-goosey. They can play music in the clubhouse now. And Tori used to never let them play music. Everybody had to listen to their, you know, you could listen to music, but you'd have earphones. So there was no fights or repercussions if guys were playing country or rap, and various groups didn't care for either one. So now everybody can play music, and they're getting along famously.
That always fascinated me about baseball clubhouses, how the whole music thing, how many fights happen because of music. And you think, like, even like on our dorm in college, we always used to fight about music, and we were all like coming from basically the same backgrounds. These guys are, they're from different countries. They're from different parts of the United States. Like, how would they ever agree on music?
You know, wasn't there a famous instance where Randy Johnson got in a fight before a start?
Yeah.
The notoriously prickly Randy Johnson, who gets extra prickly before his start. And somebody played some music, and he went to turn it down, and ugliness ensued. I think it was when he played for the Mariners, I think.
Yeah, well, I remember this story. There was another one where there was a charter plane where Ugith Urbina, during the really sad 2002 Red Sox season when the team just imploded, when Joe Carrigan was the coach, Ugi Urbina was playing something on his boombox after a loss, and Trot Nixon got mad, and they got into a fight in the plane. And, I mean, look at back. I think Trot...
Yeah, right. Trot escaped there, huh?
That guy didn't have gasoline poured on him.
Yeah, or that guy, they didn't allow him to bring a machete on the plane, Ugi.
Yeah, and that's like 2 years later, the machete thing happened. But yeah, it's always, those are little parts of baseball that I always want to know more about. Handshake, the different handshakes, the music they play. What do these guys talk about? These guys are all like high school dropouts or.
Right, or yeah, they're not.
I mean, college dropouts.
No college graduates there among the group, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking about that because when the Red Sox were playing the Blue Jays and they showed Kevin Millar. And I saw pictures in the Boston Globe or something of, like, he and Big Poppy on the field before the game, and they're both, like, laughing uproariously. And everyone's always like, Kevin Millar is, like, the funniest guy in the world. And I'm like, what does he do? Like, what's he talking about on the field with them? Like, what makes Kevin Millar so funny? Like, what can he and Big Poppy possibly be talking about that's so funny? Is it, like, dirty jokes? Is it stories about women? Is it, like, hey, remember the time when Tito said... What are they laughing about?
It's a great question. I would have the same question for Nick Swisher.
Well, that's a good point, too. Yeah, he's always,
They make Nick Swisher sound like he's Eddie Murphy during the 1982 Delirious taping.
I know.
He's just, like, rioting every time he says makes a joke.
Is it, like, anecdotes, like, funny stories, or is it, like, jokes, or is he just do funny dances? Like, what is it? I'm fascinated by this.
I was thinking maybe part of it, like the wrinkle to it, is that these guys aren't really funny, so that if anyone's even a little bit funny, they
like
become overly funny. It's
right.
Like being being the one funny person at a huge family gathering.
Right, yeah.
Like anytime I get together with my dad's family, it's like I'm Henny Youngman. But I don't know if I'm that funny. I'm sure same with your family.
Right, right.
And the O'Connells get together and have some corned beef and cabbage.
Right,
talk about the Republican Party.
Exactly, yeah. Right. I'm like Penny Youngman there too, sure.
But it's a great point, like Kevin Millar and Big Poppy, who's going through this, you can't even call it a slump anymore. Like how could he make Big Poppy even laugh?
I mean, I don't know where Kevin Millar is from. He's from somewhere in the southern part of the United States. He has some kind of an accent, I think. And obviously Big Poppy is from the Dominican Republic. They really have no commonality in their background whatsoever, except that they both played for the Red Sox. So is it all just like stories about the Red Sox? Or what did he say that's so funny? Are they making fun of somebody in the crowd? Like I was fascinated by this picture where they're both on the field and they're instantly laughing.
I think they make fun of Curt Schilling.
Could be.
Just get a huge kick out of that.
Yeah, it could be.
They probably just do what we do. Like, we make fun of people we know.
Right, yeah.
So they probably just pick like the three people. Maybe they tell Johnny Damon stories and Schilling stories or Manny stories. The Manny probably is
a
source of comedy.
Manny story, yeah, that's a good point. Remember the time Manny did this and then they both just start laughing? Yeah, that's probably a good point. Manny stories is probably it.
Well, do you feel like the Yanks are on the road back?
Just before I answer that, the other thing that fascinates me in general in baseball questions is when a guy gets to first base and the opposing first baseman and he, like, what do they chat about? You always see guys talking when they show him, like, taking his lead at first.
Yeah.
And the first baseman, like, hey, how's the wife and kids? Or somebody should write a whole book about that. Some first baseman should just write a whole book about his conversations at first.
See, I always thought that they talked about stuff like, what was that, a fastball? Yeah, fastball. Knew it was coming.
Just so you think it's that simple?
I really do.
It's, there's nothing like, they're not talking about the great issues of the day or like,
I think it's
going
like,
after the game, any of that, no.
I think it's like, made you work for that one, huh?
Yeah,
eight pitches. Guy throws some cheese. Yeah, he does.
You think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's in the moment stuff.
Maybe
unless
they
like played together though.
Point. Yeah, if they played together, they probably were like, hey, how's so and so doing or whatever, yeah.
So can you imagine like let's say you're playing first base for the Yankees and our friend the Blue Boy singled. Like maybe there's guys like that who would say things the Blue Boy would say.
Yeah, that would cause me problems because I'd be so distracted if a ball came anywhere near me, it would hit me in the head because I'd be laughing.
The Blue Boy would be like, oh my lord, I got the worst hemorrhoid.
Exactly. Yeah.
Then you'd laugh and then people would watch it and be like, what are they laughing about?
Right, right. And the fans don't like that a lot. I know, especially the Red Sox, Yankees, there's always commentary about, you know, somebody was a little too friendly with Euglis on first or vice versa. You know, somebody was a little too chatty with the Giambino, yeah.
See, you know, LeBron James is taking heat for storming off the court after
right.
he got knocked out. I loved it. I thought it was great. I hate when everybody shakes hands and hugs.
Yeah. I
like bitterness. I don't want these guys to like each other. I want it to be unfriendly.
Oh, I think one of the problems in sports nowadays is ever since free agency and everybody could become a teammate next year, there's no – it's not like the Yankees and the Red Sox in the 70s where those two teams hated each other.
Right.
Fist fights, you know, Billy and Greg Nettles, the whole litany. But nowadays, yeah, like pregame prayers together in or postgame prayers in football. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with praying, obviously, but, you know, these two teams have been beating the hell out of each other for 60 minutes, and then it's, let's get together for a prayer circle.
Yeah.
That's not old-time sports. Yeah.
I liked the days of, like, Thurman Munson and Carlton Fisk when they hated each other to the point that they looked for new ways to, like, possibly get in a fight.
Yeah, they were, like, trying to pick a fight with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's much better. And LeBron, I mean, I know it's poor sportsmanship and what have you, but the guy, you know, he just poured his heart and soul out on the court. He loses. He's the ultimate competitor. He wants to be the next Jordan and go for the jugular. And he loses, and he's supposed to be like, hey, good luck. Go get him, you know?
And he's saddled with, you know, these teammates that basically didn't show up.
Right.
I would have stormed off, too. And plus, like, I don't know. I've played a lot of basketball back in the day. It's routinely guys storming off after they lost the game, like, kicking stuff. And I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah.
It made me like him more.
A little competitive fire, absolutely.
I'm not trying to teach my kids a lesson about sportsmanship by watching an NBA game.
No, and you teach your kids that because you want them, because they're not going to be professional athletes by and large, so you want them to be good citizens and good sports and, you know, fair play and all that. But when you're on the NBA level, LeBron doesn't need to be taught about good sportsmanship.
Yeah, my kids aren't going to watch LeBron storm off the court and then think it's okay to act like that. When they play sports, is everybody so upset?
All I could think of when I read about it and I saw it was what was going to happen to Skip Bayless's head.
I thought the same
first
thing.
First and 10.
Yeah.
Did they have paramedics standing by this morning on the set?
Oh, Johnny, you're not going to believe this. I got some emails today about it. Apparently, he didn't agree with LeBron's decision to leave the court.
I'm shocked.
On first take today. He had some thoughts on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Shocking.
Some thoughts on it.
I'm shocked. That's the first thing I thought of. I'm like, oh, Skip Bayless will not enjoy this at all.
I hate the hugging, and I hate the, you know, it's one thing if it's like Kobe and Carmelo Anthony, those guys were on the Redeem team, they played together, but, you know, why does LeBron have to hug Hito Turkoglu?
I kind of like it in hockey, though, I'll be honest with you, because hockey, they're like literally fighting each other and swinging sticks and literally trying to kill one another.
Yeah.
You know, they're missing teeth, they're bloody, and then they get together and be like, hey, yeah, good series, eh? You know, for some reason, I kind of like it in hockey when they have the handshake line.
Good luck to you and your organization.
Exactly. Hey, what was that all about, huh?
It was, well, when after Scott Walker decked Aaron Ward of the Bruins Kane series, then they had the handshake line.
Yeah.
It was funny, like Walker shook his hand and he gave Ward the extra couple, you know, taps on the chest, like, hey, man.
Sorry, you know, I almost decapitated you. Yeah.
And the Bruins are all shaking his hand, and meanwhile, you know, 5 months from now, soon whenever they play the Hurricanes, they're all going to go after this guy.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's like, hey, sorry about that. Okay. All right, eh? Okay. Good job, eh? And these guys are like, yeah, good job. We're going to kill you in 5 months. Good job. Great.
can't wait till we see you in November, right?
Good job. Yeah. I'm going to punch you in the face in November. Good job. Okay.
Yeah, so that's why it's kind of funny in hockey. I enjoy it in that. But
baseball doesn't, you know, baseball, the guys don't go on the field and hug each other.
No, no. And football, I mean, it's not like a formal line like there is in hockey, but guys kind of always go up and, you know guys they know, see guys they know from college or you know, teammates they played with. So,
well, and for Belichick, it was always the FU handshake for him.
Yeah, right.
After he'd already, you know, demolished Peyton Manning, he'd be like, I'm going to go find Peyton and shake his hand. Hey, good job, Peyton.
Exactly.
Sorry about the three interceptions. That was great. Right. Yeah, he actually uses it as psychological warfare.
Right. Right.
There was a great handshake at the end of the Lakers Nuggets series, George Karl and Phil Jackson. No love lost between those two. And
Phil Jackson. It's some bad blood, huh?
Phil Jackson gave him the, you know, one of my favorite handshakes, the I used to date your girlfriend, the one you're dating now handshake.
Yeah.
And you know that I dated her, and we both know some of the stuff she's capable of in the sack. Good luck. Nice series.
See you soon.
I love those.
Yeah, that's
love
fantastic.
Those handshakes.
Yeah, that's good.
I've been on both sides of that handshake over the years.
Yeah.
And it's much more fun to be the first guy in the handshake.
It's much more fun to be Phil Jackson in that scenario.
Yeah, it's much more fun to be Phil.
Yeah, definitely.
Than George Karl.
Indeed.
What else have you noticed while following the baseball schedule in the Yanks? Any American League teams jumping out at you? Because for me, it's like I don't feel like there's a best team in the AL this year.
Oh, I beg to differ. I think we're seeing the best team. It's the team in first place in the AL East. As the Yanks wind their way through the AL season, I have to say this, and this is going to be frightening, but there's nobody out there that really scares me, aside from the Red Sox, but just because they're 5-0 against them this year, and they seem to have the Yankees' number in recent years. But, like, I used to be afraid of the Angels, and I was looking at the Yankees' schedule the other day, and after the All-Star break, they go out to the West Coast, and normally I'd be like, oh, that's going to be a killer, but this year, I'm just not afraid of the Angels at all. The Twins should be a lot better with Morneau and Maurer, but they're just not. And the Rays are not the Rays this year. Now they have all kinds of injury problems with Kazmir down, and they lost their infield for the most part, their middle infielders. So
that's been great for both the Red Sox and the Yanks, because that was the one team that was the bad matchup for both Red Sox and Yankees.
Yeah, and I mean,
they've been taken out of the equation, basically.
There's really nobody in the Central. Detroit does not put the fear of God into me.
No.
There's nobody else in the Central. There's nobody in the West.
I will say the one thing with Detroit is that their 1-2 is probably the best 1-2 in the American League right now. And I am fortunate to have one of them on my AL keeper team, Mr. Edwin Jackson. No, I mean, Edwin Jackson has been the biggest surprise this season, I think, in either league.
Yeah, he's been huge, and they have this guy, what's his name, Porcello?
Yeah,
he's
rookie,
won five
though.
In a row, the 20-year-old, so they're a little scrappy.
You never, those rookies, though, they get to like 150 innings in September, and then it becomes that whole moral issue of how much do you want to push the rookie.
Right.
But the Verlander looks like old-school Verlander.
Yeah, he's back.
He's dealing. And Edwin Jackson, I watched some of yesterday's game, and he is a top 4 or 5 starter in the league now. Yeah, arguably maybe even higher than that. He might even be top 2 or 3, but that team scares me a little in a playoff series. The only thing is Rodney's their closer, and he's, you know,
terrible.
It's like a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
And then Texas,
yeah,
in the West, you know what's weird about them? They're 30-20, plus 37 run differential.
Yeah,
admittedly,
offensive.
Bad division. But, you know, here's the thing, though. Their offense hasn't really been that good.
No. But the Yanks just went in there and took 2 out of 3 and beat the hell out of their pitching. They beat them 11-0, and they lost the game. And then they won 10-10. What was it? 10-4, something like that. 10-2, maybe. So
yeah, but they're 10 games over 500
without even really their offense taking off yet.
Yeah, Michael Young's having a good year. Nelson Cruz having a good year. A couple guys are having mediocre years. Hamilton's having a terrible year. Chris Davis is like one more 0-for-4 away from getting sent down. I'm not quite sure how they're 10 games over 500. I guess the division's just bad.
I think that's a factor.
And then I look at, like you said, the Angels. They just don't seem to have it. Santana was throwing like 89 yesterday. I don't think he's going to be a factor this season.
No, they don't. And there's no one else in the West. Even, I mean, the Mariners or the A's, forget about it.
Yeah, the A's are a mess. I'd like to, you know, we did a nice job with our preview of predicting who was going to be good. I think the one team we missed was Cleveland. We both thought Cleveland was going to be pretty good.
Yeah, as did everybody, and they're really not that great. Carl Pavano is their second-best pitcher. That tells you everything you need to know, although he did get – well, he didn't get the win yesterday, but he won a game that he started against the Yanks yesterday. So
the one thing that I've noticed watching all these different teams is just how bad the bullpens are. The bullpens are so bad. You know, you've lost a couple games.
Yeah.
Just because once it got to your third or fourth bullpen guy, that was it.
Right.
And I think everybody is in that same boat, basically, except Boston.
Yeah, Red Sox have a great bullpen. That unfortunately may be the difference, but they have other problems, though.
Well, with the Red Sox, they're 29-22, and in my opinion, Ortiz has cost them at least six games.
Probably. I mean, he's left...
Conservative estimate.
I heard yesterday that he left 57 base runners on in the month of May.
Is that true?
Yeah. That's what they said during the game yesterday.
Ugh.
That's painful.
Yeah, because the guys around him are hitting.
Right.
So, and he's not, obviously. Not only is he not, but I'd be interested to see this, if there's any statty guys out there. So Ortiz, looking at his stats through 2 months, I don't want to step on, I wrote a column about him that's going up tomorrow, but so he hit .332 with a .445 on base, .621 slugging in 2007. He dropped 70 batting average points, 75 on-base points, and 114 slugging points last year.
Oof.
Then this year, he's down another 79 batting points. He's down 85 on-base points, and his slugging is almost half. It was .507 last year. It's .287 this year. That has to be the biggest two-year collapse in the history of baseball.
Oh,
I would love to see, like, is there any other batter in 2 years who has fallen off a cliff two straight seasons like that?
I mean, they keep comparing his demise or his decline to George Scott and Jim Rice, but then in the last years of their career, but if you look at their numbers, it's not even close. I mean, he's so far and above, beyond, below what they were. It's just awful.
Yeah, well... Again,
or great, depending on your perspective.
Oh, stop. So, I don't want to step on what I wrote,
yeah.
But I just think, you know, he's having a guy having that bad of a season, batting third basically for the first 2 months with all the other guys around him hitting, I think has cost him probably five or six games.
Yeah, but you could probably point to that. I'm sure there's games you could look at. Certainly that Angels game where he single-handedly stranded 12.
Yeah.
That could do it. That was one that definitely, you know, a hit here or a hit there, they win that game. Just one hit by him, they win that game.
Yeah, there's been a bunch of one-run games that even if he'd gotten one hit in a nice spot, at the very least it goes extra innings. Or.
And their problems were compounded by the fact that Jason Bay cooled off.
Yeah, he did cool off.
J.D. Drew became J.D. Drew again.
Yeah.
Pedroia's hitting for average, but he hit a home run yesterday, but he hasn't had any pop. And Euclid wasn't going to hit .400 all year.
It's a weird season. Not a lot of guys playing well in the Red Sox.
And it's amazing that the captain, Jason Varitek, has got 10 home runs. I wouldn't have predicted he would have 10 home runs all year, let alone by June 1st.
Well, how about this? Starting ERAs of the Red Sox starters this year.
Yeah, that's been,
455, 460, 563, 565, and 882.
I mean, the whole thing that the Red Sox Nation talked themselves into when they didn't get Teixeira was that it was going to be built on pitching and defense.
Yeah.
And their starting pitching has been mediocre, although it's coming around a little bit now. And their defense has been atrocious.
Atrocious.
I mean, just utterly atrocious.
It's been really bad.
They have no shortstop. Whoever they've had at shortstop has just been abysmal. And they're just not that great defensively. And they can't throw anybody out either. The great Varitek, who was signed because he's such a good catcher, good backstop, good game caller, and their starting pitching has been shaky, and they haven't thrown. He's thrown out like four base runners out of 60.
And if that
not
hasn't
just him, but Cotteris too.
And if that hasn't been bad enough, we haven't had the Rendog all season. It's been this round robin of atrocious color analysts.
Why was Rance Mullenix involved in Toronto this weekend?
I don't know. Johnny, at this point, I just would have gone the other way and gotten like Lenny Clark.
Yeah, just
Dennis Leary.
Comedy. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Even myself. I mean, at some point, it has to be a little bit entertaining.
I mean, I don't know what they were looking for with Rance Mullenix. I don't understand that one at all. I didn't get that. He has no Red Sox background, and like he was bringing nothing to the table in these games.
Or have Orsillo just do the Vince Scully and be by himself.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather hear nothing. I would rather hear silence over Dewey Evans telling me that that hit might be big for Big Poppy. That might be big for him to get out of that slump. You know, you get a little something started and it's like, all right, my brain is turning off.
Yeah, Dewey was not doing much either. No.
Why couldn't we hire one of the 15 guys that does Yankee games?
You would think they do have an excess of people. Sure, David Cohn was a Red Sox. He could have done some Red Sox games.
Explain to me the Mike Francesa job at Chamberlain thing.
Oh, well, I
get emails about it constantly. And he just flips out once a week about job at Chamberlain.
Mike Francesa is adamant that the Yankees, the only thing for the Yankees to do is to return Jabba to the bullpen to be the eighth inning guy.
Yeah.
Which he's right about, by the way. I mean, they are a much stronger team, especially now with Wong. Wong is on the comeback trail. He's looked good for a couple of games now. He's lowered his ERA to a slim 16.5.
You mean he's been able to finish an inning without being escorted back to the dugout by his manager?
Yeah, no. His fastball is up. His velocity's up. The ball's down. He's looked pretty good. He's knock on wood. He's looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And they have Phil Hughes, who's competent. He was not great yesterday, but he had a good outing before that. He's up and down, but he's a competent starter. And so
hold on. Let me interject. Phil Hughes is the master of the, oh my God, he looks awesome today. And then.
Yeah.
Then you flick channels and you come back and there's three guys on base and he just gave up two runs. You're like, what happened?
Yeah, he also kind of has a Phil Hughes face, a la Peyton Eli Manning face. Of
big time.
When things don't go well, there's a bad Phil Hughes face that I don't enjoy seeing.
I got to say, that's not a good sign for his future, Johnny.
No, it's not. He's not a very good poker face now. But he shows signs where you're hopeful that he could be good. And he's a competent fifth starter. I mean, you know, he's a fifth starter, and they would be so much stronger with Jabba in the eighth inning, and they could do what they did in 96 and shorten the games with fairly good starting pitching and then, you know, shut down the games in the sixth inning. Because you could have Jabba pitch the seventh and the eighth, and then Mariano pitch the ninth. So Frances is right about that, but people, especially it seems like younger guys, call up, and they're adamant that he has the possibility to be like a lights-out ace of a starter. And Francesa is just on like a personal crusade to prove that, one, in the years when they won the World Series in the 90s, they never had a lights-out ace number one starter, and two, that he's not an ace number one lights-out starter. So he just thinks it's like foolish to even disagree the slightest that maybe we should keep Jabba as a starter. So he like has launched, in the every time it comes up and somebody has the temerity to call up and say, like, well, I think he could be a good starter and they should leave him there. He's got four pitches and he's only 23 years old and yada, yada. He just launches off on a tirade and hangs up on the person and screams at them that they're insane and should never watch baseball again, basically.
But he also might be a little mad that his show's not doing as well as it did.
Oh, really? Is that true?
I don't know. Maybe he's a little testy these days.
It could be. He does sound a little angrier at times with callers. You know, he seems to fly off the handle more quickly with people. Yeah. I mean, some guy called up the other day, apparently, and I think I caught the tail end of it, or I think I was driving home and I caught the after effects where he was still going on and on about it, but some guy called up and said how Jabba was right now one of the five best starters.
I heard it. I got emails about that. It sounded fantastic.
Which is just, I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous to say that with a straight face.
He's not even one of the best three in his team. I got news for you.
Exactly.
It's on YouTube.
He's right about that, but he just went nuts about it and then beat the horse. He beat the dead horse and then he buried it and dug up the horse and beat it some more. Like, just going on and on about it. I mean, the Yankees do have a good point now about saying, well, while they may think about that down the line, that Jabba's problems so far have been in the first inning this year, and he gets better as the game goes on, so there's not much point in making him a one-inning reliever when it's the one inning that he has problems with.
Yeah, but Jabba doesn't throw as hard as he did.
Well, that's the other problem. I mean, I think the theory about making him a reliever is that he could dial back and throw 93, 94 plus for an inning, but he tries to, like, save his energy because he's the starter and he wants to go 6-7 innings, although he never gets there. But he, you know, he's throwing four pitches and whatever toll that takes on his arm. He's, you know, he's only throwing like 91, 92. Mm. And his breaking balls have been very good. He's got a good curve. But I mean, I think the best thing for them to do, that solves so many of their problems if they move him into the bullpen.
I'm disappointed he didn't say he had a nice hook. Please enjoy that.
Yeah, I should have.
It's one of those fun baseball double entendres. He's got a nice hook, that Jabba.
Jabba does have a nice hook. That's the right.
Hey, I got to read you a couple emails from people. These came after I guess you could only just call it now your infamous attack on the Yankees a couple weeks ago. When you just, you basically renounced your Yankee fandom and attacked everybody in the team and called Mariano Rivera the most overrated player in baseball history.
I did. That's true.
Kirby from Clearwater says, I was so excited about you calling Jacko after the Red Sox dismantled the Yankees. I waited an extra day to listen to it. Boy, was it worth it. I've now to come realize that April truly is the greatest month in sports. What other month offers the Masters, the NBA playoffs, the Final Four, and Johnny's annual I hate the everyone of the Yankees routine? I agree.
That's a good point.
All good points by Kirby Wilson.
It's good. It's an annual tradition.
Eric,
maybe next time we do April podcast next April, maybe you can promo it like that. A tradition like no other.
Yeah, maybe play the
maybe you could have
music.
Jim Vance do the intro.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Eric from Baltimore has an interesting point. He says, does Jacko not realize that he is the entire problem? He complains constantly about failed free agent signings, but the reason they make so many free agents is to let a young player develop. He's ready to throw a 22-year-old Phil Hughes to the garbage heap because he's not Johan Santana right now? Does he not realize that Hughes' current stats are superior to Santana at 22?
Wow.
Does he not realize that Bernie Williams had a 91 OPS his first season?
It's true. It's true. That's a good point by that guy from Baltimore, too. Yeah.
If Jacko was in charge, the linchpins of the Yankee dynasty never would have been given a chance to succeed. Bernie Williams, Mariano Rivera, and Jorge Posada. He left out Jeter.
Can I just say something in my defense on those? I also was around for the years of Brian Taylor and Sam Militello and Erica. No, I'm sorry. What was his name?
Eric Munson?
Kevin, I'm thinking, Eric Milton.
Eric Milton.
And Kevin Moss and all these other wonderful prospects that were going to be the next great thing and that they hung on to, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I understand you have to have patience and wait these guys out, but with a $200 million payroll, it's a little hard to say, well, they'll be mediocre this year and scrappy, and we'll see what happens.
Drew in Seekonk, Massachusetts, said we missed a couple of Godfather issues in our latest podcast. Johnny, you were wrong. The guy who played Clemenza did not die.
No, I thought that he did between the Godfather 1 and Godfather 2.
No, it's actually a much more annoying and frustrating reason, which I did not know, and I can't believe I didn't know this. Apparently, he wanted so much money to be in Godfather 2, and beyond that, wanted to actually write his own lines.
Really?
And he was initially going to be the character that Frankie Five Fingers ended up playing. What was it? No, Frankie whatever.
Frankie Five Angels.
Yeah. That was initially supposed to be Clemenza. In the book, he's the one who turns to the family, but because he wouldn't be in the movie, they ended up creating that other character, and the guy got nominated for an Oscar, and the guy who played Clemenza really never did anything notable again.
If it was like Shelley Long on Cheers, but much worse. I always thought that he died. I thought he had a heart attack or something between Godfather 1 and Godfather 2.
I think at this point, he probably wishes that he had. It's an amazingly, we always talk about David Caruso, Shelley Long. This was much worse.
Oh, that's just awful. That's the worst thing I've ever heard.
Here's what he did after The Godfather. He appeared in 5 episodes of The Super. He was on Incident on a Dark Street. He played in Honor Thy Father. He was the lead in Joe and Sons, which lasted 11 episodes.
Oof.
And then he was in Night of the Juggler as Lieutenant Tonelli. And then in The Gangster Wars, he played Giuseppe Joe the Boss Masseria. His last role was Dear Mr. Wonderful. He played an agent and died in 1988.
Oh, 88?
Yeah.
Oh, God. He lived for a long time after that. I don't know. That must be some rumor I heard that he died in between the first and the second. And
hey,
I always believed it.
Hey, dog, you cannot turn down Godfather 2.
Oh, my God. I mean, what was he going to write? He didn't like take the cannolis, leave the gun. He was going to improve on that and write his own dialogue?
Well, I forgot that. And for Godfather 3, Richard Duvall wouldn't do that unless they gave him, like, just a crazy amount of money. Robert Duvall, I'm sorry. And Coppola had to rewrite it, and eventually George Hamilton became the conciliary, which arguably one of the biggest talent drop-offs ever.
Yo, God, that's awful.
The other point that this guy made, Drew and Seekonk, was that, you remember I was making fun of Sonny, how he went for the ugliest bridesmaid?
Yes.
In the book, they make a big deal about how well-endowed Sonny is.
Right, and that's the scene at the wedding where they show his wife and she's moving her hands apart like she's talking about a grinder, but she's not.
Yeah,
yeah.
And And as Drew points out, there were only so many women who could handle his size, and she is one of them.
Ah, there you go. And I've actually read the book, The Godfather, too, but it was years ago.
Forgot that one.
Yeah.
Last thing. Remember we talked about if they reshot Godfather 3, who would have been the perfect actress to...
Oh, yeah. And we said we knew we were going to hear from people on this.
Well, it's done. Anne Hathaway.
Oh, very good. Yeah, that would have been good.
Yep.
They should CGI her into that film.
$25 million, Anne Hathaway as Michael Corleone's daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Re-release Godfather 3. You cut out Sofia Coppola and just redo the movie, basically, and you re-release it as a DVD. I think you make the money back.
Oh, I think unquestionably. Absolutely. The director's cut, like they did with Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's,
oh, that's a good idea. I forgot about that.
Anne Hathaway, that's a good one.
Yeah. That's all I got for you, Johnny.
Do you want to take this opportunity to apologize to Derek Jeter, who's now hitting 306 with a 13-game hitting streak?
I don't.
You don't? All right. I think you should. I think it would be fair. I think it's only fair.
Listen, I never was really standing by what I was saying. You were attacking Big Poppy. That was all I had. Was,
you gotta laugh
I had
out.
To attack somebody on your team. I didn't know I could twist some facts around. The captain has been a lot better lately.
It's been huge for them. Just huge for them.
Yeah, I actually was listening to our podcast and that we did because I was in the plane and my computer downloads them. And I was saying how I wanted to start calling you the captain. That kind of came off as an insult. I didn't mean it that way, Johnny.
That's all right. No, I didn't. I listened.
I meant
it
as like you were washed up as a stickball player.
Yeah, no, I know. I understood. I didn't take any offense to it. It got a little heated there in that one. You were like, Derek Jeter stinks or whatever. It was a little heated between us. Well, not really, but it just sounded that way.
I can't even remember the last time it got heated with us.
No, we're all good.
Yeah.
It's not like
last
a LeBron Dwight Howard thing.
Are you excited for Real World Cancun?
I am. I was watching the DVR of The Duel, my DVR of The Duel the other night, and it came on, and I had to slow down during the commercials and rewind and watch the commercial for it. Yeah, it looks good. I didn't understand, like, they really are basing it in Cancun. I'm like, is this like a special spring break one? It's just a couple episodes, but I guess it's really the real world in Cancun.
Yeah.
It's a good idea because there's God knows how many bars there with a liberal IDing policy, so they can just go in there and get rip-roaring drunk every night and let madness ensue.
It'll be interesting. I'm sure something horrible is going to happen.
Yeah.
Could be the end of the franchise.
This could be the end, you think?
Possibly. Did we ever talk about the Pedro movie?
A little bit, I think, but I have never seen it. I didn't watch it. Did you?
I lasted about 20 minutes.
That's that good, huh?
Yeah. I think the one thing I appreciated was that they found a guy to play Jed who was actually more annoying than the real Jed. I didn't know that was possible.
Really? They should have had me in on the auditions, and if I wanted to punch him in the face, I'd be like, he's perfect, just like the real Jed.
Are you more excited for Real World Cancun or the Joe Buck Show?
I don't have HBO anymore, but I'm going to get it just for the Joe Buck Show because I think it's going to be off the charts on the unintentional comedy scale.
I can't wait.
I read today that it's not only going to feature live interviews with sports celebrities, I guess and other celebrities too, but it's going to feature Joe Buck acting in comedy skits. You can't make this stuff up, people. It really is. Joe Buck in comedy skits. I haven't really enjoyed the witticism of Joe Buck on football games or baseball games. I'm not sure how much I'm going to enjoy it in like a 10 or 15 minute skit.
For once, I'm speechless, Johnny.
I mean, it really sounds like something from The Onion, but it was in a reputable publication that I read today. I just don't know. I'm intrigued. I'm looking forward to tuning in for the premiere.
I was hoping that Troy Aikman would be like his Ed McMahon sidekick.
That would be great.
Troy could just say, "You're exactly right, Joe," like he does when he's doing football games.
That's perfect.
Laugh at his jokes and look glassy-eyed. It would be like having him doing Fox Sunday.
Now, if he could be in some of the skits, then you really got something.
Yeah,
Troy and Joe in a skit.
I'd like to see a skit where they tell Troy Aikman facts, and then 5 minutes later he tries to recite them. Like they read him six lottery numbers, and then 5 minutes later he tries to repeat them. Be like a modern day game of telephone.
Yeah, the skits are. I'm just fired up for. I'll tell you,
it's going to be great.
It's going to be fantastic.
All right, Johnny, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, see ya.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Let's bring him in now, the world's preeminent duel expert, Mr. Dave Jacoby. What's happening?
Not much happening to you, Bill.
I watched the Hockey Chain a couple more times this weekend.
As did I.
And
are you starting to learn the lyrics? I start to know the lyrics now.
I know the lyrics, but I don't understand them. It's like that when Manfred Mann did Blinded by the Light, like those kind of songs where you're singing along, but you're making up your own lyrics as they go along.
Yeah, me too. At one point I go, chug it on your way, yo. I definitely sing along. I definitely sing along. I can't lie.
Eat your butter.
Eat your noca. Chanta force. Yeah. I could probably do this for another 10 minutes, but.
I was watching The Hills season finale with my wife last night, throwing another bone after all the sports I've watched, and I decided that The Hills.
No. Pretend you don't like it. Go ahead. Oh, yeah. You're watching.
I'm going to pretend I don't like it.
Yeah, sure.
I think The Hills should also start out with the Haka chant. I think all MTV shows should start out with the Haka chant. That's my goal for 2009 for MTV.
It definitely sold. The new season of True Blood, they should just start with the Haka.
Yeah, let's go backwards and try to figure out what shows wouldn't have worked if you started out with the Haka chant. Like CSI Miami would work.
Sure.
That'd be a good Haka chant.
That'd be better.
I'm all about the Haka chant. All right, so the duel, we're going to talk about the duel first, and then we're going to get into summer reality TV recommendations, because really the summer now has become the time that reality TV thrives and blossoms into what it is. Quickly, though, the duel is now, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. We're getting down to the best competitors. We had a big meltdown last week.
We're getting
week.
Down to, quote, the guys who could be on the cover of Men's Fitness magazine.
Yeah, who said that, Isaac?
I believe it was Terrified Evan.
Oh, yeah. Which is funny because he's probably one of the Mitchell Report candidates on this show.
Yeah. And he's definitely on the report. He's one of the 103 unnamed athletes.
How do you feel about Isaac? Or how did you take what he said when he got knocked off a couple weeks ago and he said, give me 18 months and blah, blah, blah.
And I'll come back looking like Megatron.
Yeah, looking like Megatron. To me, that he was basically just saying he's going to do steroids, right?
Yeah, it was a full-on admission. It was his first time on a challenge. He knows what it takes now. It's like the WWF.
I mean, Landon's a pretty good athlete. Like, I don't even know if he's doing the PEDs or whether he needs to.
It's the problem is it's like just suspicion drags the whole sport down like baseball.
you're guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's difficult. Like, anybody hits a home run nowadays, you know, it could even be a pitcher. I'm like, oh, juice.
It is true. And for some reason, that hasn't changed either. Even though the testing is much better now and baseball seems to be headed toward a slightly better place, I still feel the same way. Adrian Gonzalez has 20 homers. I haven't seen one of them because I obviously would never watch a Padres game. Suspicious nonetheless.
Yeah.
Seems a little skewed for Adrian Gonzalez.
It's troublesome, you know. I give everybody the benefit of the doubt. I'm a Barry Bonds sympathist too. It's like, hey man, never got caught. Never got caught.
Well,
put him in the Hall of Fame. Never got caught.
It's true. He did kind of get caught though.
No, never tested positive. Never got caught.
It's funny that it's not, the suspicion is now shading toward other sports. Like, I received an inordinate amount of emails from readers who are convinced that LeBron is on HGH. And now he's the one guy that I would pretty much bet there's absolutely 0% chance, because we saw what this guy's body was like at age 18. It was clear that it was eventually going to evolve into the body he has now. That's just a guy growing into a body he was destined to have, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, this topic is a hot button issue in the world of sports, especially around the office, and I've gone back and forth on it, and I've settled on this, that it's like evolution, it's Darwinistic, it's like he's a genetic freak.
Yeah.
It's like there are so many people produced, billions and billions of people, and just like there's going to be a mutation in the genes at some point to create this super athlete named LeBron James. It's like a genetic mutation.
Yeah, and I think Dwight Howard is in that class as well.
Yeah.
Those are the two guys that they stand out. But, you know, when you look back 12, 15, 20 years ago, I think you could have said the same thing about Karl Malone and David Robinson at the time.
We actually went, we were having this argument, and we pulled up some pictures of Karl Malone. And
yeah.
his build is much like LeBron's.
Yes, it's the same build.
They look very similar.
LeBron
but then you think about that, and it's terrifying because LeBron James has a crossover and a jump shot. and he's faster than everybody on the court.
He's a more coordinated, faster Karl Malone.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Dwight Howard and David Robinson, very, very similar. And in fact, I would argue that David Robinson was slightly more of a specimen to see in person than Dwight Howard.
He had more finesse and like grace and elegance in his little post moves and jump shots and whatnot, whereas Dwight Howard just grabs it, dunks it.
Yeah, Dwight Howard's like kind of in the middle ground between David Robinson and Shaq. Young Shaq.
Yeah.
Not old fat Shaq.
I want to know how come we didn't draft the guy that beat up Jose Canseco in that MMA fight. Can we get him in the NBA?
Which guy was that?
You didn't see this?
Oh, I did see the one that just happened.
Yeah, he's like 7'6". Sign him up.
How does Canseco not have a sex tape yet?
There's a lot of, Canseco, I'm sure Canseco has a sex tape.
Look, I'm not pleading for the sex tape. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, damn, I wish he had a sex tape. I'm saying he's kind of pulled over every rock and stone that a scumbag can pull over to make money. And this is the last frontier for him.
Yeah, and you know that whenever the Manny thing happens or whatever, you know, Canseco's just sitting there and on his porch, just being like, told you so. Oh, another win for me.
Yeah, he was Woodward and Bernstein somehow.
Yeah.
We got away from the duel. So
we got to get back to the duel.
There was a lesbian, I guess, love triangle.
Yeah, it seems like there's a new love triangle every episode. I'm all for it.
Yeah, there's always been different love triangles. This is the first one that involved three women, mm-hmm. which might be a first for MTV history. I'm not sure. But it led to Jen, who was dating Anissa's former flame, Rachel, hooking up with her on the show. And and Jen and Anissa are having bad blood. And it all could have been easily settled in the duel because Jen was picked to the duel and she could pick her competitor and she ducked Anissa.
She ducked Anissa.
It was so disappointing.
And they ended up losing anyway. And they structured the episode the whole way that you were expecting this big showdown at the end. It never happened. And she was scared of Anissa.
You know what it was like? It was like the LeBron-Kobe finals.
Yeah. Yeah, except without the puppet campaign.
And without vitamin water being involved.
Yeah, everyone's all like, oh, yeah, the puppet campaign. Nike's got a plan for this. Don't worry. They do. Don't worry.
What's the plan?
They'll address it in the puppet spot, guaranteed. I mean, those things cost millions of dollars. They're not just going to scrap the whole thing and start running old commercials.
You don't think the guy the executive who was in charge of it, when the other executive said, don't you think we should have a backup campaign with Dwight Howard just to be safe? The guy's like, no.
Dwight Howard's an Adidas guy, I think. Yeah, he is.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he's an Adidas guy.
Well, what about Turkaloo?
I think there might be Courtney Lee, like a Courtney Lee puppet making an appearance soon with a mask, a little tiny mask.
So
we gotta get back to this love triangle.
Yeah, yeah.
There's certain things about Anissa's behavior that make me fear for Rachel's life.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just got all the symptoms of potentially violent, crazy ex-girlfriend going on.
Yeah.
Obsessive, mm-hmm. physical, passive aggressive, angry, and she's gonna end up stabbing somebody.
Temperamental?
Yeah. What do you think? You don't think Anissa's even keel?
No, I'm saying she's temperamental. I'm throwing
absolutely,
that in there.
100% temperamental. Yeah. And I also I love Rachel's role too. Like, how about y'all two just fight over me, and I'll just stand on the sidelines and watch.
Also, not a ton to fight over. I got to be honest.
She's a good looking dude.
And it's not. It's a little far fetched, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Jen, I was thinking about Jen with two N's, who I guess her legacy is going to be that she spurred me on to creating the Jen with two N's theory.
She's also an ex-Raiders cheerleader. I forgot that little tidbit.
Yeah, you get the Jen with two N's and a former cheerleader, you're going to have trouble. But first episode of Real World Denver, she comes on, hooks up with the best-looking guy on the show and is involved in this whole... I guess, some sort of sex drama, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, like he was actually hooking up with the New Jersey girl, Coley. But they were like kissing once in a while when they were drunk.
And Coley Jen claimed him as a crush.
Yeah.
And then her friend Jen stepped in.
Yeah.
I mean, stepped in like big time step. Stepped in as much as a woman could
step in. She raised the ante.
And that was a phenomenal love triangle of a different kind. That really shaped that whole season, which was, in my opinion, a good season.
And it had a good season. It had good night vision cameras inside those rooms, which they're missing on the Duel, too.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
I want to know what's going on behind those closed doors.
Yeah, they don't have the cameras in the room. The night vision technology has not. Maybe MTV's cutting back, for all we know.
Yeah.
My point is that Jen with Two Ends peaked in that Real World Denver season, and now has kind of... I feel like it's like it's almost like seeing a wrestler who peaked in the WWE and now is like on like the TNA.
TNW or whatever. Yeah,
yeah. She's in TNA and she's in, yeah, in a plot that's not as good and she doesn't look as good. She's 20 pounds heavier and it's like, oh, man.
Breaking out the old catchphrases.
Yeah, it reminds me of seeing Kurt Angle on TNA. Yeah. It's like, man, I wish he hadn't shaved his head. And so, yeah, it's sad.
And one of my favorite moments from this last episode was Evan explaining that this is all that he has.
Yeah, that was good. Candy.
He's been doing these challenges for so long. This is all that he has, and he needs to focus on it. And then usually my initial reaction is to sort of like laugh at the man, but it almost brought a little sadness over me. I was like, oh, man, this is all that he has.
Well, but at the same time, can we look down on him, though, when we look forward to the show every week? It's kind of all we have, TV-wise.
Evan, this is all we have, dude. Don't make me start feeling sympathetic towards you. This is all I have.
Yeah, they've hit a lot of the great subplots that you can have in these things. Like, I love the fact that nobody will vote at MJ because he's got a kid. He's here for the right reasons.
During the he was losing in the elevator challenge.
Yeah.
But what happened was is one of the other castmates just yelled out the word Bella, which is the name of his daughter, and they kept yelling Bella, and that just inspired him.
Yeah.
And he persevered.
Yeah, because he wasn't inspired before.
No.
He'd hear his name to really bang it home. It was a little like Adrian yelling out Rocky in one of the Rocky
films. It was actually exactly like that.
Yeah. Hey, they never really explained to us how the crowd that's watching whatever Duel event, it seems like it's always partisan for one of the two competitors, but they never explain how it's gotten to that point.
Yes, and at some point, you'd have to, if you're the person who's not being rooted for, you're looking over at your buddies like, come on, guys. Like, you can at least be quiet here.
Yeah, it's awkward.
Yeah, and the Brad and Tori cheering each other on thing was pretty good.
Yeah, they've done a lot of, I like what they've done with the actual challenges this year. There's been a lot of, like, people hanging over stuff.
A lot of hanging over cliffs. And the explosions over that water was good, too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
instead of cutting the rope, they come up with some sort of, like, M80-type firework explosion.
Right.
It added a nice touch, a nice visual element.
Thumbs up for the Hills. I mean, for the Duel. And I think, I mean, it's obviously going to be Landon and maybe Brittany, I think, come out of this.
Oh, I've got, no, it's Evan.
Over Landon?
The thing is Evan, like, Evan's got this Kobe Bryant thing.
Yeah.
Like, he's got the mental edge. He's crazy enough to care so much that he'll prevail.
All right, what are we betting? Because I say Landon.
Oh, what are we betting?
Let's bet dinner.
No, one of us has to write CT an email, honest email.
All right.
And start a line of dialogue with CT.
Okay, fair enough. So you're out on the hills.
I just got this really scared feeling in my stomach.
Oh, that's it. Hey, you put the stakes down. You're out on the hills.
No, I had to quit the hills.
Didn't watch last night's spectacular season finale.
I loved the hills for so long, like the same way that like the Anthony Kiedis loved heroin. It's like, this is just dragging me down. This is making my life worse, not better. I looked in the mirror and I said, I cannot watch the Hills. I don't even allow myself to watch a preview for the upcoming Hills during the commercials because they'll just drag me back in.
So you missed Spencer's sister and Heidi's sister have pushed the show to another level, in my opinion. Arguably the two dumbest girls that have ever been on reality TV. Mm. And I know that I'm not throwing that statement out lightly. I've given
it some time. You've done your research.
I've done my research, and that's the conclusion I'm going to come to. I would say that Stephanie Pratt, Spencer's sister, is the single dumbest person in the history of reality television. I'm going to go that far.
Not just with her
actions and her personality, but even the look on her face is just classic. It's the same look that Mike Brown actually had during the last three games of the Orlando-Cleveland series. But so good. Those two alone, so good. And then you throw in Kristen Cavallari's big comeback, and in my opinion. Thank God. Because she's
and Lauren Conrad bowing out. Lauren Conrad bowing out.
Good. Good luck. I mean, who is more boring than her?
She's got a career to follow up with.
Yeah, she'll be back.
She had a show on like Bravo or something, like hosting parties, like a party makeover show that lasted like half an episode. I think they like canceled it midstream.
She'll be back. Cavallari is smoking hot. I mean, Lauren Conrad, they basically wouldn't have dates, or she'd have these fake dates, but like she's been dating some dude for the last year and a half, and the guy hasn't even been on the show. Cavallari will like go at it with somebody in a limo with the cameras going. I have high hopes for her.
Yeah. Oh, good transition too.
To what?
They announced that the Real World is the next season is going to be in Cancun.
Oh, they showed the highlights.
I am so excited about this. I mean, with the last season, they're like tackling social issues, and we're talking about post-traumatic stress syndrome and the Iraq war. No, let's talk about body shots.
Yeah.
Wet t-shirt contests, hooking up, getting in fights, getting arrested. That's your bread and butter. And we're
agreed.
Right back into it.
Now, let me give you an over-under of 2.5 episodes for alcohol poisoning somebody at the hospital. The ambulance comes and somebody gets their stomach pumped. Do you go over or under? 2.5
over.
Episodes.
Going over.
Really?
Over. Yeah.
I'm going under.
Because I think they know that they need to cat. They can't bring in weak people for Cancun. I mean, I went to spring break in Cancun in college, and I think after 3 days, I probably needed a little hospitalization myself. Spending a week in there was like a tour of duty. I can't imagine what it's like to live there for 3 months.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, has anybody ever been there for more than 2 weeks? Other than the cab drivers?
I don't think so. And the cab drivers and those dudes whose job it is to like host the spring breakers, you know, those guys that went down there 1 year were like, I'm just going to stay here forever, man. I'm not going back to San Diego State.
Yeah. 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 So you get that guy, you get the cab drivers, and you have the bellhops at the hotels. And that's
Yeah. And the guys that sell jet skis.
See, I feel like if they're going to do Real World Cancun, they should have done it the old school way with a hotel that had cockroaches and paint coming off the walls.
Yeah, or do it during spring break. They better be there during spring break.
When does it start?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it starts at the end of June.
Yeah, I think it's a late summer thing.
So if they started taping it a few months ago, that would go through spring break, obviously. That would be the smart move.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Boone and Mary's not going to screw that up. Any other reality shows you'd like to recommend for us this summer?
Yes, I have a few. That I would like to recommend.
Because I'm proclaiming you the prince of reality TV.
I prefer the king, but that's fine. My father was a prodigious reality television. Yeah.
Isn't the king the Boonham, not Boonham, but Murray?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to give him king. You get prince.
Fair enough.
All right.
I've got a big recommendation.
Okay.
As you know, I'm a huge Dr. Drew Pinsky fan.
Okay.
Like, huge. I think Phil Jack, I think he can fix anything. He's like the wolf in Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
Like I think he knows how to stop the Magic's offense. I feel like he can do anything. And he's got a new rehab show. Except this time it's not celebrity rehab. It's called Dr. Drew Sex Rehab. He's going to be rehabbing sex addicts on VH1.
Is David Duchovny on?
No, it's not celebrities.
Oh.
It's real people because they really want to confront the issue. They don't want the reality show waters to be muddied by the celebrity distractions.
I like it.
I'm very excited about that.
The best part is when they have the females who are sex addicts.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to have the guy who's a sex addict. It's like, all right.
What's he going to say? Like, oh, I think about sex all the time.
It's like, wow, that's not really that great.
That's crazy, yeah.
But you have the girl who's a sex addict. It's like, I need it every day. That's what I want to see talking to Dr. Drew every day.
Percent out of 100 chance there's a gen with two N's.
All right. How great would that be? How funny would it be two?
Great.
Two. They have to go with the gen F and gen S?
Gen with two N's shows up on Dr. Drew's sex rehab.
I'm calling it right now. I'm predicting it. So when does that start?
That starts late summer, early fall.
Oh. Well, I'd like to recommend one. This is a show my wife was watching last night that I got sucked into for a really valid reason. But it's that terrible Tori and Dean Oxygen Network show, which is like a show about their marriage or whatever. Now, I'd never seen it before last night. within about 10 minutes, I became totally fascinated by her loser husband, Dean. This guy is an actor, but he doesn't work. And he's like saying to her, because she's complaining because she's got a book. And she's got she's going to do a 90210 cameo. And she's got two kids. She's busy. She's overwhelmed. And Dean tells the camera, like, you know, I don't like when she gets like this because she's, you know, she's the breadwinner.
And, it's my job to keep her happy.
Yeah, just, you know, we need her. And so Dean's just always available. Like, they go to the park. He's there. They're moving. He's helping to move. I'm not sure what he does all day, but it's enough to make me watch about five more episodes, try to figure it out. Now, near the end of the show, he got a role in a TV movie, he said.
And it was really?
A big thing, whether he could help them move.
Oh, please. I hope it's like one of the sci-fi movies, like when ants take over the world.
Well, what's funny is he tells her, I got big news. And he's like, I got a movie of the week. She's like, oh, that's great. And he's like, it starts Monday. I can't help us move. And it's big crisis. Now, at no point does she say to him, what network? What's the movie? Never comes up. Never asks what channel. It's a movie of the week. Out of the 500 cable channels you might have, he quite possibly might be on one of them. But I just can't recommend him any more highly.
Yeah.
He's just phenomenal. He's got bad hair. He's like, it's almost like he's like a polished Kevin Federline. Like a rich man's Kevin Federline.
I'll buy that. Where's Federline, by the way? Good call. What happened to him? I miss him.
Federline is gained a ton of weight.
I think he's on the hosting circuit somewhere.
Okay, here's the movie that he got according to his IMDb. By the way, he played the plumber in Kiss the Bride in 2007.
No, of course.
He appeared in one episode of Without a Trace, one episode of The Closer, one episode of Navy, NCIS. He was in the
Is Mark Harmon still in that movie?
He is. He was in one episode of the Kojak pilot, which I didn't even know they made.
Oh, nice. Remember Mark Harmon in Summer School?
Oh, he was great.
God, he was the best.
And then in 2005, he appeared in two episodes of Tilt.
Oh, on ESPN.
Yes, ESPN Zone. So the movie that he was making that he wouldn't tell what's-her-face what it was about, it's called Santa Baby 2. And it stars Jenny McCarthy, and Paul Sorvino plays Santa Claus.
Really?
Yeah.
Star-studded.
Star-studded. Doesn't say what network it's on. But, I mean, oh, it looks like USA Network. That's kind of what.
Oh, that's big time.
Dean McDermott.
Yeah, that's below 100 on your dial.
Yeah. I highly, highly, highly recommend the Tori and Dean show.
Here's something that the two of us haven't talked about that we need to.
Okay, and you have to go in a couple minutes.
Yeah, good call.
Okay.
Who are John and Kate, and why did 10 million people watch this show? I've never heard of this show.
I had never heard of it until the first.
I don't know anything about these people.
Yeah, until the first Us Weekly cover, I'd never, ever heard of the show. Ever.
I'd never heard of them. I've never watched a second of it. I don't even know what this is, and 10 million people watch. That's more than anyone's watched in one of these NBA playoff games.
And that's true. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I always thought TLC was just a place that, like, dwarves were on and people with human growth hormone. Like, those were the shows they had. Like, if you were a lady whose legs were three times the size of your body, you got a show on TLC.
Or both.
I never knew that they had just parents with a lot of kids. That was a show.
Yeah.
But yeah. You know, we get Us Weekly. I've been reading the stories. She's really
your wife gets Us Weekly.
I'm not gonna put down Us Weekly. I like the pictures.
The hills for sure.
I like the pictures. They've been on the cover for five straight weeks. In fact, I twittered about this the other day. I wondered if I wanted to live in a world where they could be on five straight Us Weekly covers. I just feel like we're doing something wrong as a society.
Yeah.
When that's happened, but she really seems like a monster. This lady. It's kind of riveting to read these stories. It's like she's a modern day Mommy Dearest Joan Crawford. Faye Dunaway as Joan Crawford.
And it's also like she went to the salon and was like, can you just give me a haircut? Like some spikes in it? Maybe something like, imagine if I was like an evil Disney witch.
Yeah.
Can you just give me something that would look like that?
I like that the guy was like, hated her so much that he just ended up with some 23-year-old who wasn't even good looking. It's just like, he's just the best he could do is I ask her and I'll take it. This is my one way I get back. I still have not watched the show though. You haven't watched it, right?
No, I don't know about that one.
Hmm. So you're going to recommend, what is
Dr. Drew's Sex Rehab?
I'm going to recommend at least just one episode of the Tory Dean Show just to enjoy Dean McDermott.
Yeah, and I think everyone should watch. I haven't watched, but I'm going to watch one episode of Fourth and Long, Michael Irvin Show.
Oh.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Did that start?
Yeah, it's out. That's gone.
Hmm. I'm going to also recommend the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, which I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the first two games, I got to say.
They're over now, though. But
no, it's right down 2-0. But I read in one of the things today that it only got $2.6 million, which just seems pathetically low.
Which is 20% of John and Kate plus 8.
Yeah, we're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed yesterday's game. I liked that. I liked when Geno Malkin went after the guy right at the end. It was good. It was HD. I don't know. I think it's underrated at this point as a product.
Yeah, I'm in on hockey.
Yeah, I think Pittsburgh wins game three, then it might get interesting. All right, we'll let you go, Jacoby.
All right, brother.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right, that's it for the BS Report. One thing, our producer, Joe Mead, has recovered from ACL and MCL surgery and is back with us after, what the hell happened? Where'd you go?
It's been a little bit of a hiatus. I've been hanging out in New Haven.
For 4 weeks?
Yeah. I think surgery was what? Surgery was on May 8th. What is it today? June 1st?
This is the most mysterious knee surgery since Kevin Garnett's popliteus tendon.
Yeah, and I'm still a little gimpy.
Because you couldn't get around because you can't drive because you got your leg in a giant cast.
Yeah, I mean, it's the right leg, so that's really why I can't drive.
The gas pedal leg.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe I could do a little, left foot action on the brake, but I don't know that that's recommended.
Joe, I don't know. The viewers got used to the sweet sounds of Jacqueline's voice. I don't know.
That's right.
She's getting emails from people asking if she's single, like stuff like that. I don't remember getting those emails with you.
No, but I don't think she has a fan group out there, so.
Oh, that's a good point. Nice comeback.
I think my fan group's about 1,100. I want to thank all my fans who've been waiting for my return.
It's been a dramatic return. Jacqueline had the cause of women's pro soccer, and I think maybe you need a cause. I don't know what that is. Do you want a cause? Do you want to think about it?
I want to think about it. Let me get back to you on tomorrow's show.
Think about it. Okay. We're glad you're back.
Appreciate it.
Feeling better?
Yeah. I'm in good spirits.
Eligible for the 2010 WNBA draft, definitely?
If the league doesn't fold, I'll be there.
All right. We'll be back in the BS Report tomorrow, and maybe Joe Mead will have his answer for what his cause is going to be until then.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
That concludes, ends, finishes, wraps up another BS Report. With all the talk about baseball, the upcoming football season, and hockey playoffs, Bill Simmons neglected to mention something which frankly cannot go unstated. Okay, here goes. For a limited time, hurry into Subway and enjoy the new Tuscan Chicken Melt. Lovely seasoned chicken, melted bubbly cheese with olive vinaigrette, piled so high with the crisp veggies you love on your choice of freshly baked bread. All that deliciousness with 9 grams of fat. It's part of a fresh fit meal.